So before starting, I'd like to beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees, that I can somehow or other, although unqualified, can speak something useful and from bona fide from Srimad Bhagavatam. And if I don't, please correct me. So we're discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 8, entitled The Churning of the Milk Ocean, Text 9. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tasyam Chakru Spriham Sarve Spriham Sarve Sasurasura Manavaha Rupodarya Vayovarna Mahimakshipta Chetasaha. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Because of her exquisite beauty, her bodily features, her youth, her complexion, her glories, everyone, including the demigods, the demons, and the human beings, desired her. They were attracted because she is the source of all opulences. Please repeat after me. Because of her exquisite beauty, who in this world does not want to possess wealth, beauty, and the social respectability that comes from these opulences? People generally desire material enjoyment, material opulence, and the association of aristocratic family members, Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam. Material enjoyment entails money, beauty, and the reputation they bring, which can all be achieved by the mercy of the Goddess of Fortune. The Goddess of Fortune, however, never remains alone. As indicated in the previous verse by the word Bhagavat Para, she is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is enjoyable only by Him. If one wants the favor of the Goddess of Fortune, Mother Lakshmi, because she is by nature Bhagavat Para, one must keep her with Narayan. The devotees who always engage in the service of Narayan, Narayana Parayana, can easily achieve the favor of the Goddess of Fortune, without a doubt. But materialists who try to get the favor of the Goddess of Fortune only to possess her for personal enjoyment are frustrated. Theirs is not a good policy. The celebrated demon Ravana, for example, wanted to deprive Ramachandra of Lakshmi, Sita, and thus be victorious. But the result was just the opposite. Sita, of course, was taken by force by Lord Ramachandra, and Ravana and his entire material empire were vanquished. The Goddess of Fortune is desirable for everyone, including human beings, but one should understand that the Goddess of Fortune is the exclusive property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One cannot achieve the mercy of the Goddess of Fortune unless one prays both to her and to the Supreme Enjoyer, the Personality of Godhead. So verse again. Tasyam chakru spriham sarve sasur asura manavaha rupo darya vayom varana mahimakshipta chetasaha. Because of her exquisite beauty, her bodily features, her youth, her complexion and her glories, everyone, including the demigods, the demons and the human beings desired her. They were attracted because she is the source of all opulences. So, the churning of the milk ocean is going on, and so many things, good things are coming out after the poison has come out. So, it seems that the poison has to come out first. So this is often our experience. Well, actually, often the experience is that the nectar comes for devotees in this day and age. There's some nectar that comes at the very beginning. Everything's new and attractive and different and exciting. So therefore we feel very enlivened and inspired, and also, of course, because usually at that time we're very humble, thinking all the devotees are pure devotees and they're miles above me. But then after a time, there has to be some real hard work put in to our spiritual development. So at that point, maybe that first taste is withdrawn a little bit. Krishna gives us a free sample, and we feel very happy in Krishna consciousness and enlivened. But then he says, well, actually now we have to, you have to do some really hard work. You have to actually earn it. Of course, in one sense, we can never really earn Krishna's mercy by our own efforts. But we do have to try as hard as we can. And do whatever we can to obtain his mercy. So then sometimes it seems that there's some poison comes up. So just as in the churning of the milk ocean, there was some poison. And the merciful Lord Shiva was delegated by the Supreme Lord himself to deal with that poison. Just to demonstrate actually how the Supreme Lord is actually more pleased by having his devotees glorified than himself being glorified. So we have to deal with all the anattas. We have to purify our consciousness. And then we can gradually come to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. But whether we are purified or not purified or partly purified, this verse is saying, Tasyam chakru spriham sarve. Everyone, sarve, everyone desired the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. The demigods, even actually though they've already got so much opulence, so much wealth, but they're desiring this, they are attracted immediately by the goddess of fortune. The demons, often they also have a lot of wealth, illegally acquired, but they're attracted, and also the human beings. So everyone is actually attracted automatically to the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. No one is immune to her charms. In other words, she's irresistible, too attractive and tempting to be resisted. Actually, there's this one person who is not irresistibly attracted because he's the all-attractive one and he's completely renounced. And that, of course, is Lord Krishna himself. But I think we've all had a similar experience in the presence of an extremely beautiful person, not just a good-looking person, but an extraordinarily beautiful person. Our eyes are irresistibly drawn to that person like magnets. So, just like Gaurav Bhagavan Prabhu was telling me yesterday about one Mridanga maker who has a very beautiful daughter, and they were in Vrindavan, and unfortunately some gunda or mafia type person got attracted. He couldn't help it, so they had to leave, and arrangements were made for them to go to Mayapur. So everyone's attracted by extraordinary beauty. So just imagine the beauty of Lakshmi Devi. But she's just an expansion of the original goddess of fortune, the queen of Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani. What can be the beauty of her, of that queen of Vrindavan, and her hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis or gopis? Lakshmi Sahasra Sata Sambrahma Sevyamanam. That there are hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis or gopis. So Lord Brahma is actually describing the gopis and the Lakshmis. He's using the same words interchangeably. So actually the gopis are Lakshmis. But in the next verse, which we've just chanted, Lord Brahma describes the unique loveliness of he who attracts, charms millions of cupids. Kandarpa koti kamaniya vishesha shobam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. So Krishna, he's actually the source of all beauty and all opulence, of course. He's all attractive. And when our consciousness is purified, when that poison has been extracted, squeezed out, or removed from our hearts, and raised from attraction or attachment to the mundane attractions of this world, Janmaishvarya Shruta Shribir. So these are the opulences which Kunti Devi speaks about and Prabhupada refers to also in the purport. So these are mundane attractions, attachments, respectable parentage. Somehow or other, we always seem to think that we come from respectable parents. Most people do anyway. Even though actually, just like in my own case, coming from a Malecha Yavana background, thinking, oh yes, I come from a good family. But now I'm realizing through the education I'm receiving in Krishna consciousness that actually is totally fallen, degraded family life. That was my origin. And then even in later family life, Griha Medi life, I was a Pukka Griha Medi. So, respectable parentage, actually, the only really respectable parentage is actually knowing that actually our father and our mother is Krishna. What is it? Krishna Pitta, Krishna Mata, etc. So Krishna is actually our father. Krishna is our mother. Now we can have genuine pride that actually, yes, I have a very respectable father. I have a very respectable mother. And great opulence. Well, they say that even a pauper is proud of his penny. A pauper is a very poor person. But somehow or other, he still thinks that, yes, I've got something. And with this something, I will make investments. I will improve my situation. And I will become very wealthy. High education. Shruta. So everybody is striving for high education in this day and age. But Srila Prabhupada was very scathing about the education given in this day and age. Where is the that university which is teaching the science of the soul, about consciousness? Actually now, I think there are some institutions, educational institutions, which are studying consciousness. So education can be a very dangerous thing. Just like where I'm currently serving in Manchester, there's a very big university, 100,000 students in that place. And if you don't catch the students right at the beginning of their university career, they're off into sense gratification. Because the whole city is catering to the student population for nightclubs, bars, so many different entertainments for the students. So it's so easy for them to become distracted. And even if they're not distracted, they have to be focused on education, which is actually just teaching more and more about the repeated cycle of samsara, birth and death, and how to manage it, but not how to get out of that samsara. And finally, Sri, bodily beauty. So everybody's looking for bodily beauty. In fact, one of the biggest industries in the world is providing creams and so many other ways in which people can become more beautiful. So everybody's striving for these opulences. But when these things become nothing for us, or even detestable, like the stool of hogs and dogs, then we'll be able to appreciate and relish in great bliss Krishna's all-attractive beauty. So that's what Kunti Devi is saying, that actually, unless we're materially exhausted, tvama kinchana gocharam, unless we've actually given up all desire for these opulences, then we can't really appreciate. We can't chant Krishna's holy name with real feeling, because our feelings are directed in another way, on another path. But when we give up all these things, then we can pray with Queen Kunti, Tvayi menanya vishaya matir madhupate sakrit Ratimudva hatad adha gango vagam udanvati. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. So, Queen Kunti is praying that actually there should be no hindrance to that attraction to Krishna and to Krishna's devotees and Krishna's service. Just like the Ganges flows forever flows to the sea without hindrance. So, in that same way, this is our ambition, that our attention, our attraction, is never diverted to anyone else, only to Krishna. So, Lakshmi Devi is exquisitely beautiful. But Lord Krishna is many, many times more beautiful than her. Now, there was one, yesterday we were hearing about the Ashta Lakshmis, which was very interesting, and how there are many eight categories of eight things that actually even the verse was the eighth canto, the eighth chapter, the eighth verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this verse it's saying Mahimakshipta Chetasaha. Their minds were agitated. This is the demigods, the demons, the human beings, by her glories. So what are her glories? So I just did a little bit of research to find out something about this word mahima, glories. And whether it's a coincidence or not, I don't know. But in the fifth canto, chapter 4, text 5, there are 8 glories described. So whether these glories are specifically related to Lakshmi Devi, we can judge for ourselves. But in that text, it's described how King Nabi made his son Rishabdev the emperor because he saw that he was qualified. All the people were very happy with, they loved Lord Rishabdev. So King Nabi wanted to take the opportunity to enthrone him as the emperor of the whole world and then leave his kingdom, leave his great opulences. Just give them up. Just like they were still. And he went into the forest with his wife, Merudevi. In fact, actually, he went to Badrik Ashram, where he engaged himself very expertly in austerities and penances with great jubilation. And I like that phrase. This is actually in the verse itself. Engaged himself very expertly in austerities and penances with great jubilation. So penances and austerities, if they're not done with great jubilation, then maybe they're not such a good thing. At least, just like there was one devotee was telling me, he went to stay in Soho Street temple for the 40th anniversary, and it was packed because thousands of devotees were actually coming, because the original 4 devotees of Sri Sri Radha Lanachwa, well, 4 of out of the 6, actually there were 7. Mother Malati always likes to insist there were 7 because her daughter Saraswati was there. But 4 of those 7 had come. Gurudas and Jamuna Prabhus, and also Shyamasunda Prabhu and Malati herself. So they came, and there was a whole week-long festival celebrating the 40th anniversary of the installation of Sri Sri Radha Lanishwara in London in 1969. So lots of devotees came. And so devotees were coming from all over the UK, maybe also from Europe, I don't know, because there were many other senior devotees coming to give classes and give talks. It was actually very nectarian. It was also broadcast on the internet. I don't know, maybe some of you may have seen. But this devotee went to there, and there was nowhere to stay. So he just had, of course, here, everybody just sleeps on the floor. All the brahmacharis sleep on the floor. So it's nothing unusual. But the point was that he was saying, okay, he just had to, there was no place for him. He just had to find a spot somewhere in the temple to lie down. And he was describing, it was so wonderful. I could feel the hard, my ribs on the hard floor, and I was so happy, he said. So in that way, King Nabi was performing his austerities and penances with great jubilation. So actually, it is a cause for jubilation. In fact, he was keen to leave behind those opulences and just to engage in these austerities and penances. So, in full samadhi, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nara Narayan. And by doing so, it says, Tan Mahimam Avapa. Tan Mahimam Avapa. Maharaj Nabi was elevated to the spiritual world, known as Vaikuntha. Srila Prabhupada describes that phrase, Tan Mahimanam Avapa, as very significant. And then he quotes from Srila Sridhar Swami saying that Mahima means liberation in this life. We should act in such a way in this life that after giving up this body, we will become liberated from the bondage of repeated birth and death. This is called Jivan Mukta. Then he describes 8 symptoms of such a liberated person. So this is where the 8 comes in. So Lakshmi Devi is blessing us with 8 symptoms that we can aspire to. Number 1, apahata papa. So a person who is Jivan Mukta is apahata papa, freed from all sinful activity. He's not dushkritinaha. And Prabhupada describes in the purport how actually he's freed from attachment to the 4 main sinful activities, which are eating meat, fish or eggs, illicit sex, intoxication and gambling. So this is the first symptom, which of course Lakshmi Devi was totally free from all sinful activity. And this means actually not just those manifest sinful activities, but the seeds of sinful activity or tendencies, proclivities that are within the heart. Papam, kutam, whichever. The aparabdha and prarabdha. All of it completely free from those things. The second item is vijara, is not subjected to the miseries of old age. So a person who is liberated, even in this lifetime, is not subjected to the miseries of old age. So this is certainly something to aspire for. And I was just reading Harisori Prabhu's Transcendental Diary. And just at the beginning, in around about this time actually, in 1975, he became Srila Prabhupada's personal servant. And on one occasion, Srila Prabhupada was talking in class in Vrindavan. He was talking about the miseries of old age. And he was talking about himself. Just see, at one point, I was a young boy and I had so much energy. And, you know, I was jumping and skipping, just like we see children automatically, just skipping and jumping. They can't help it. They've just got surplus energy. But look at me now. Now I'm an old man. Like that, he was saying. But after class, Srila Prabhupada went with his close associates, including Harisori and his personal secretary and others were there. He says, actually, I am just a young boy. He says, Harisori Prabhu had this realization, actually, yes, Srila Prabhupada is always actually just a young boy. And we've seen some symptoms of that, just like often Srila Prabhupada would go on his morning walks and young men would find it very difficult to keep up with him. He was walking so fast. And there was one occasion also in London where there was a famous Rath Yatra in 1973. The one that is actually mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where I think it was the Guardian newspaper said that the Rath cart rivaled Nelson's column. It was a little bit of an exaggeration, but in reality, in physical terms, but transcendentally, it definitely far exceeded the Nelson's column. But on that, actually, Srila Prabhupada wasn't so well. And his disciples put him on the Rath cart, to sit on the Rath cart with Lord Jagannath. But at some point, Srila Prabhupada became so inspired and enthusiastic that he jumped off the Rath cart and started dancing ecstatically for the whole of the rest of the parade, which was a fair distance, actually. And the devotees were absolutely amazed to see Srila Prabhupada just dancing like a young boy. So, the second symptom of a Jivan Mukta, of course, Srila Prabhupada is Nitya Siddha Jivan Mukta, maybe you can say. But he's definitely vijara, not subjected to the miseries of old age. 3, vrimrityu. Vimrityu means he does not take on any more mortal bodies destined to die. So somebody that, because of Jivan Mukta, means somebody who's engaging his mind, his activities, karmana manasa gira, his activities, his mind, and his words in Krishna's service, for nothing else. So then he's guaranteed he's never going to take another mortal body, a body that has to suffer repeated birth and death. The fourth symptom given is vijigatsa. Vijigatsa means no longer desires material enjoyment. So the devotee who's already liberated, he's totally fixed on just giving enjoyment to Krishna, never expecting any enjoyment for himself. The sixth item is apipata. He has no desire other than to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, his dearmost pursuable Lord. So that's his only desire. So the Ravana, of course, he wanted to enjoy Sita, but without Lord Ramachandra. The liberated devotee, he has no other desire. So everybody, even the demigods, the demons and the human beings, they were desiring the goddess of fortune. They were attracted to the goddess of fortune. But the actually liberated person, he's just pursuing Krishna. He's just looking for Krishna. Hey Radhe Vraja Devike, hey Lalite, hey Nanda Suno Kuta, where are you? Oh, the six Goswamis, they're not thinking actually that they're seeing Krishna here everywhere. They're actually looking for Krishna. Oh Krishna, where are you? Are you here? Are you there? Oh Queen of Vrindavan, where are you? So they're always just looking for some opportunity to serve Krishna, to please Krishna. The seventh symptom of a Jivan Mukta devotee is Satya Karma. All desires are directed to the Supreme Truth, Krishna. He doesn't want anything else. And the eighth symptom is Satya Sankalpa. Whatever he does desire, because of course it's not possible to become desireless. That, Srila Prabhupada explains, is a Mayavadi concept, or at least it's a Buddhist concept. Try and extinguish all desire. But that is impossible. So therefore, a liberated devotee becomes Satya Sankalpa. Whatever he desires is fulfilled by the grace of Krishna. So therefore, if Krishna doesn't fulfill anything, he's not disturbed, he's not troubled. If he has a desire and it's not fulfilled, he thinks, oh, whatever. Krishna is so merciful, he will fulfill whatever desire I have. If he doesn't fulfill it, then it's not the right thing for me. So, definitely no desire for any material benefit. Just to serve the Supreme Lord. And that desire is fulfilled by the Lord's grace. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that the word Mahima means returning to the spiritual world, back home, back to Vaikuntha. So, and also Sri Shukadev Goswami says that the word Mahima means that the devotee attains the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is called sadharma, or the same quality. So just as Krishna is never born and never dies, his devotees who return to Godhead never die and never take birth within the material world. So just as Krishna is Satchit Ananda, Vigraha, we're also Sachit Ananda Vigraha. So when we start to acquire these same qualities, these same symptoms that obviously are embodied by Lakshmi Devi herself, then we can go back home, back to Godhead, back to the spiritual world. So in this way, we can understand a little and appreciate the actual glories, the actual mahima of Lakshmi Devi. So they have nothing to do, actually, with her fulfilling our desires for material enjoyment by giving us material opulence, great wealth, the association of aristocratic family members. Actually, those things are like a curse for someone who desires the real goal of life, Krishna Prema, because that is the real nectar. That is actually where we can really become happy. Yayatma Suprasiddhati. Actually, Savaipung Sang Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Ad Hoksaje Ahoitukiya Pratihata Yayatma Suprasiddhati. That for the soul to be truly happy, to be really satisfied, fully satisfied, devotional service to the Supreme Lord, unbroken and unmotivated devotional service to the Supreme Lord is essential. Otherwise, there will always be some lack, some dissatisfaction. So Prabhupada also quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam Taya Pahrita Chetasam Vyavasayatmaka Buddhi Samado Navidiyate. So if we are distracted by this Bhogaishvarya, this opulence, then Samado Navidiyate, then we can never, it never takes place. Pure devotional service to Krishna never takes place. So we have to give up this attachment to material opulence. Therefore, Krishna says, Yasya aham anugrihnami harisye taddanam shanai tatodanam chajan chasya svajana dukha dukitam. He says, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth, then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. So this is in answer to a question he was asked by Yudhisthira Maharaj, why is it that the devotees of Lord Shiva tend to become wealthy and opulent, but your devotees, they tend to become poverty-stricken? So he says, if I especially favor somebody, then I take away all his material attachments. So it's a special favor, actually. Of course, if we can do it voluntarily, just like the brahmachari, he's voluntarily saying, okay, no material attachments, not relying on anything except Krishna or the temple, maybe. But the Lord says in the next verse, when he becomes frustrated, referring to the man who's suffering so many distresses, because he tries again to make more money, but when he becomes frustrated in his attempts to make money and instead befriends my devotees, I bestow my special mercy upon him. So instead of trying to make money, we should befriend the devotees, Krishna's devotees. Then Krishna will bestow his special mercy upon him. And then, of course, there are examples how Krishna bestowed also opulence. Just like Sudama Brahmana. He actually didn't want anything, but Krishna bestowed unlimited wealth upon him. When he got home after visiting Dwarka, seeing Lord Krishna, he was so happy, but then he came back to his humble abode and it was a palace. And his wife, who was dressed in rags, was thin and emaciated. She was beautiful and dressed in beautiful clothes. He couldn't even recognize his place. I think it's described how Sudama Vipra, he was a little attached to that renunciation that he was doing. So Krishna was even purifying him of the attachment to austerity and renunciation by giving him wealth. But of course, once we get Krishna's mercy, there's no question of having any concerns, any anxiety about our daily bread. We don't have to worry. If we're just fully focused on serving Krishna, then everything is there. So then the Lord explained how people generally avoid him and worship other deities, those who are quickly satisfied. But what is the result of worshipping other deities like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma? The problem is that the tendency is that we become arrogant, intoxicated with pride, and neglectful of duties, of our real duties. So at that point, Shukadeva Goswami narrated the tale of Rika, who received a benediction from Lord Shiva. So Rika was doing actually terrible austerities, cutting his own flesh off. He went to Kedarnath, and because he was told by Narad Muni that Lord Shiva was the most easily satisfied. So he was cutting his own flesh and throwing it into the fire for Lord Shiva to appear, because it's like the mouth of Lord Shiva, the fire. And after a week or so, still Lord Shiva was not appearing. So he took a hatchet to commit suicide, to cut off his own head. And at that point, Lord Shiva appeared. And then he asked him, "Oh, please, you know, there's no need for all this. I'm very easily pleased. Just a little water would be sufficient. Why are you doing all this?" So Vrika, because of his arrogance and foolishness, he asked for a benediction that whomsoever's head he should touch should burst and they should die. And so then, being an arrogant demon, he chased after Lord Shiva himself through right to the limits of the universe. And Lord Shiva was only saved, actually, by the Supreme Lord, who appeared as a student brahmachari and charmed him with some sweet words. And says, "Oh, Lord Shiva, you can't rely on him. He was cursed by Daksha to become an ugly hog goblin. How can you rely on him? Just put your hand on your own head and see what happens." So he did that. Rika did that, and his own head burst into millions of pieces, and he died. So actually, this is the fact. When we are obtaining benedictions, whether it be opulence or a good family, education, actually, if they're not dedicated to the service of Krishna, they're actually just going to destroy us, in the same way that Rika was destroyed. So we've talked about the irresistible charms of Lakshmi Devi, but that her beauty is just a reflection of the incomparable beauty of the divine couple of Vrindavan, who are in fact surrounded by millions of Lakshmis or gopis of similarly exquisite forms. So also I discussed something about what's actually Mahima, the glories of Lakshmi, characterized by the eight symptoms of a person who is Jivan Mukta, liberated in this very, very lifetime. And then finally, about Krishna's special mercy upon those he really favors. If he gives us wealth and opulence or whatever, beauty, that's not necessarily his real favor. The real fruit of that mercy is transcendental knowledge, which inspires the devotee to reach for the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and take eternal shelter in bliss. As Gopi Bhata Pada Kamalayo Das Das Anudas, the servant of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. Because he's like an ocean of nectar and he's the cause of universal transcendental bliss. So at that point I'll stop and thank you for your kind attention. And if there's any questions or realizations... No questions? Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Premanandi.